we will look into what are the artifacts and the sources of artifacts that you could expect to encounter in medical images and in general images, and how you could possibly remove some of these artifacts. In order to remove artifacts, you need to understand the source of the artifact, the nature of the image that you have and that you want to preserve in your filtering process. In trying to remove an artifact, you should not affect the quality or the desirable components of the image. So the goal is to remove the undesirable parts that are present in the image, which we will refer to as artifacts in general, whether they be random noise or structured noise or physiological artifacts, while at the same time preserving the information that is of interest. So in general, biomedical images are often corrupted by various types of noise and artifacts. Not only biomedical images, but any image or signal that you acquire in practice could be expected to be corrupted by various sources of noise and artifact. To some extent, we will make the distinction between noise and artifact, and later on we will simply use the term artifact. In general, the word noise is used to mean any image, pattern, or signal other than that of interest. What you want is something, but when you are acquiring the data, in addition to that, something else is coming in, and that something else is noise. The most common type of noise is random noise. So let's look at a few types of artifacts. Random noise is interference from a random process, such as thermal noise in electronic devices and the counting of photons. For example, the camera that we bring has some, perhaps, CCD array to capture the image, and the CCD array has the electronics and the detector array where there is always some noise signal being produced by the random movement of the electrons. Now, when there is light energy going on to the detector will respond to the light input and will give a signal in proportion to the input that is going in. However, I think I mentioned earlier somewhere, even if you were to shut the lens of the camera, the detector will be producing some signal due to the random activity going on due to the thermal energy of the electrons. In cameras that are used for astronomical imaging in radio astronomy, or when one is taking pictures of stars at night, because of the low level of the signal, low level of the light signal received, and the high level of noise in the background, to reduce the effect of noise, the camera is cooled using just forced cold air or cold water or sometimes cold liquid nitrogen. So depending upon the extent of cooling you want, you could use different types of cooling agents and reduce the temperature and reduce what is called the dark current. The thermal noise in electronic devices is often referred to as the dark current, referring to the fact that even when there is no light going in, there is some current. In the counting of photons in nuclear medicine imaging, in the detection of gamma ray photons, or even in the detection of X-ray photons, the interaction between the X-ray photon or gamma ray photon energy and the detector, or the passage of the gamma ray photons through the body and the attenuation, absorption or scattering, they're all random processes. And the governing principle there is the Poisson process. And that also results in some type of a noise. A random process is in general characterized by its PDF, the probability density function, indicating the probabilities of occurrence of all possible values of the random variable. So if you just give the statistics as a mean and standard deviation, those measures may not be adequate. They're adequate if the distribution is a Gaussian distribution. Otherwise, you would want the full probability density function to be specified. So a random process eta is characterized by its PDF that we will write as P of eta. And if we have multiple random variables, then the subscript to P will give you the name of that particular variable or random process. Now, this is simply a process that is generating random values. You can imagine a system that is just throwing out random values in a certain range, could be between minus 1 and plus 1 or between 0 and 1, and then you could scale them and shift them to get signals that are all positive, such as gray levels between 0 and 255, or a signal between plus and minus 1, if you wish. The samples that are generated by the process may be arranged in different forms as a function eta of t, a function of time, or as a one-dimensional or two-dimensional or three-dimensional or even four-dimensional function of space x, xy, xyz, xyz, t, if you wish, depending upon the application. Regardless of this arrangement of the values, the data that you have could be simply seen as a bunch of values. And when you compute the histogram and approximate the PDF of the system by using the expression here, P of eta, you don't care how the values are arranged in the signal linearly in time, across time, or in one dimension or two dimensions or three or four, it doesn't matter. These are just the probabilities of occurrences of the values. Now, once you have a PDF, you can compute certain statistical measures to characterize the distribution. The PDF itself is the complete information. But if you want to compute only certain measures, the most commonly used measure is the mean, which is the first order moment, eta to the power of 1, multiplied with the PDF and integrated. So it's a first order moment because the power of this function of eta has a power of 1, or the power is 1. And E here represents the statistical expectation operator, E of eta. So whenever you see E of something, you take that something, multiply it with the appropriate PDF, integrate. The PDF could have multiple variables. The integration could be with respect to multiple variables. But regardless, it is that thing which is here, multiplied with the appropriate PDF, and then integrated. It is common to assume that the mean of a random process is 0. So in most cases, you would have mu of eta to be equal to 0, except in the case of multiplicative noise, except in the case of Poisson noise, where it is only positive. Because you're counting photons, you cannot have negative values, negative counts, and hence the mean is always positive. So there could be a few exceptions. In general, you would expect or you would assume the mean to be 0. If not, you could remove the mean, process with the assumption that the mean is 0, and then put the mean back later. The mean squared value is a second order moment where you take expectation of eta square, so integral eta square p eta d eta. The variance is a second central moment where you take eta square, but eta minus mu square. You subtract the mean, so it is the deviation from the mean that is measured. You square that and multiply with the PDF, integrate and take the expectation. This is the variance, and the square root of the variance is the standard deviation. If the mean is 0, then the variance is equal to the mean squared value. As I said, in most cases, you assume the mean to be 0, and mean squared value is a measure of power, so variance is equal to the power. The average power over a certain duration or space, if you include some averaging. Otherwise, it is the total energy. So whether it is energy or power depends upon some normalization. So if the mean is 0, we have variance equal to mean squared value. So here is an example of a bunch of random numbers that are generated using MATLAB. Many of the examples in the book were created in MATLAB. Several years ago, I wrote almost all of my programs in Fortran, and then in Pascal. I didn't do much in C. I took a course on C++, but completely forgot it. Nowadays, all of my examples are in MATLAB for this book and the previous book. So here, using a Gaussian distribution, this is a number of samples arranged against the sample number, so you could scale this if you wish, and if you assume a certain sampling rate, then it's a function of time. If the x-axis is space, it's a function of space. So regardless of how you arrange it, this is simply a bunch of numbers. So here the mean is zero, that's the zero line, and you have approximately equal swings around the mean. So the mean is zero by design. The variance is 0.01. Standard deviation is 0.1. The mean squared value is the variance. It is 0.01. The root mean square value, RMS. In electrical engineering, we use the root mean square value as a representation of the average value of the signal. And that is 0.1. If you were to take the same random values, actually I have more of them, but from the same distribution, and arrange them in two dimensions, you get this, which looks like an image, and it's simply a bunch of random values. There is no structure. Of course, you have to scale the values. The values were obtained in the range minus 1 to minus 0.5 to plus 0.5. That's the range of the values. And then I had to map it to 0 to 255. So minus 0.5 is 0 in the output, and plus 0.5 is 255. In between, you have other values. So it is simply random variables or values put together as an image. And the histogram of that image is this, which is a Gaussian with some variations because it's just a finite number of samples. Okay? This is minus 0.5 to plus 0.5, zero in the middle. If I were to take a larger number of samples, it would be a better looking Gaussian. But it is a Gaussian distribution. Now, when you're dealing with combinations of real life images with noise that is random, it would be advantageous, for the sake of generality, to assume that all of the functions that you're dealing with are random processes or realization of stochastic processes. One image is simply seen as one realization or actualization of a process that generates many images of that type. In that sense, all images are treated as realizations of random processes. So if you have an image fxy, that could be a chest image or a mammogram or something, for the sake of generality, you may say this is only one observation of a possible occurrence of a number of images that look like this. What I have is just one image. And if I derive any statistics from this, these statistics will approximate the real statistics of that entire population of mammograms or chest images or CT images of the brain or whatever it is. So if you have an image fxy, you may say that for the sake of generality, that image is simply one realization of a random process f. And if you have a number of them, you combine the statistics of all of them, or the spectra of all of them, or the histograms of all of them, and say the combined spectrum or histogram is the real representation of that entire process. Otherwise, what you see is simply one realization. So this allows for statistical characterization and to account for sample-to-sample or person-to-person variations in a collection of images of the same type. For example, if you take a chest x-ray of me at one particular time, and I walk out and come back, and you take another picture, the two will not be identical because of the random nature of the detection of x-ray photons, or the state of my breathing, did I hold my breath properly, or some variations could be there in the process of capture of the image. So two images of the same object, such as my chest x-ray image, would be slightly different. So if you just take one and make measurements, the measurements may not be reliable. Whereas if you take a number of such images, then the collective statistics may better represent that kind of images. So if you want to overcome sample-to-sample observation, and a sample here is not a pixel, but one picture of my chest. That is one sample observation. And if I come back again and you take another image, that is another realization or sample or observation of my chest x-ray. And person-to-person variation. Suppose you want to characterize a population. All normal human beings in a certain age group, or all males in a certain age group, all women in a certain age group, in the case of mammograms, then you would want to average the data in a certain way across this population. So person-to-person variations could also be accounted for when you have a population of images of a certain kind. So you don't want to mix mammograms with chest images, or brain CT scan images with abdomen images, or CT images with MR images. That is not allowed. So you have to group the images according to some common feature or aspect. So statistical averages representing populations of images in a certain type, of a certain type, are useful in the design of image processing algorithms, such as designing filters. If you want to apply an optimal filter to a certain class of images, you need to know the characteristics of that class of images. What are the characteristics? Could be the power spectral density, could be the PDF or the histogram, could be just the mean and standard deviation. When you want to apply data compression techniques, you need to know certain statistics such as entropy. What is the entropy? What is the average number of bits per pixel for CT images of the brain, for example? And pattern classification procedures. When you derive features from images and you want to characterize the images as normal or disease 1, disease 2, and so on, or is this tumor malignant or benign, then you need to have some statistical description of a population for which you have derived the features. And that is possible when you have statistical averages for a population. Although we have to rely upon averages in getting the statistics of this nature, we have to bear in mind that when a diagnosis is performed, what matters is what is the difference between this individual and the average. The difference is important, and if you take the average by including the abnormals in the normal population, then that difference is lost. Or if the individual being examined is also included in the population, then there is a difficulty in detecting the difference. So the deviation from the normal or the average is important in medical diagnosis. So coming back to modeling of noise, the typical assumption made is that the noise eta xy is added to the image fxy, and that the noise process is statistically independent of the image process. Now here, F could be a structured image, such as a mammogram or a chest x-ray image, but still, for the sake of generality, it is considered to be a realization of a random process. Regardless, G, which is the sum of F with eta, and because eta is random, G will be random. So G must be treated as a random variable. So each one will have its own probability density function. In most applications, the noise process is independent of the image process. Noise comes from the random movement of electrons in the detector, whereas the image comes from the object being studied. So the two processes are completely different and have nothing in common. Statistically speaking, it is expressed as statistical independence. And statistical independence between two variables, two random variables, is expressed in terms of the joint PDF, PF eta, being equal to the product of the individual PDFs. In that case, if that is true, then the two processes are statistically independent. Now, when you have an additive combination, as we saw, G equal to F plus eta, then the expectation of G, even if they are not independent, the expectation of G is the mean of G, mu G, that is equal to the sum of the two means, and that is equal to mu of F if noise has zero mean. So expectation of G is equal to expectation of F when G is equal to F plus eta and the mean of eta is zero. The variance, on the other hand, sigma square G is equal to sigma square F plus sigma square eta, and these are positive quantities, so sigma square G is greater than sigma square F. There are different ways of computing the averages. In practice, you may not have the PDFs to compute the mean and variance accurately and precisely. You need the PDF. But if you do not have the PDF, it is possible to estimate or obtain sample means from the data that you have observed. So when the PDFs of the random processes are not known, you can approximate the statistical expectation operation by averages computed using an ensemble or collection of sample observations. So suppose there are m observations of the process F. Now each observation, in the case of image processing, each observation is an image that has a number of pixel values. So we have F1XY, F2XY, so on, FMXY. So there are m observations of a certain type of an image. So that is the ensemble now. So it is a stack of images. And if you were to average values across this stack or ensemble of images, then you get ensemble statistics. If, on the other hand, you take only one image and average the pixel values within that one image, then you get spatial statistics for that one image. Or if it is a function of time, you get temporal statistics for that one signal. So ensemble averaging will cut across a population of images or observations of your signal, whereas spatial averaging will use only one observation and use the pixels within that image in a certain manner to derive the statistical measures you want. So, with ensemble averaging, suppose you ask the question at the pixel position x1, y1, at the spatial coordinate x1, y1, what is the average? Then mu f x1, y1 is the sum of fk x1, y1, k going 1 to m. So for the particular pixel position, you take that pixel from the same coordinate from all the images in your ensemble, and then take the average, and the limit of that, as the number of observations tends to infinity, is the ensemble average at x1, y1. The autocorrelation function is an important function that characterizes the correlation or dependence between values. How you choose the values is a question. In ensemble averaging, for a given spatial location x1, y1, and another spatial location x1 plus alpha, y1 plus beta, where there is a shift of alpha beta, the autocorrelation phi f, or phi f, I met a student from Greece at a conference last year, and I was talking about some expressions, and I said pi, and she said, no, it's not pi, it is p in Greek. And then I said something and phi, she said, no, it's phi. So depending upon where you come from, it could be pi or p, or phi or phi, and so on. But let's say phi. Phi xy is expectation of f x1, y1 multiplied with F, I shouldn't say multiplied with, it is expectation of that with Fx1 plus alpha y1 plus beta. There are two values, one at one location, another at another location separated by alpha beta, and then you're asking for the expectation of that, which is the autocorrelation function. And that may be obtained from an ensemble by taking fkx1 y1, fkx1 plus alpha y1 plus beta, and then k going 1 to m, you take the limit of that average. That is one measure of autocorrelation across an ensemble. Okay? If the process is stationary, the autocorrelation function depends only upon the shift parameters and not on x and y, and then you would write it as phi x alpha beta. That is only if it is stationary, and that is the definition of stationarity. When mu f, the average, is computed at x1, y1, and at all possible pixel locations, you get an image. That is the average. And then that could be seen as a template or a prototype, and we could write that as f bar xy. So you have an entire stack of images, and you average all of them, pixel by pixel. So if you have the chest x-ray images of a number of people of a certain age group and normalize somehow for size, you take them all together and average them, you get an average chest image. It may not look like a chest image because of some variations in the positioning, but statistically, that represents the average or prototype for that population. Because each image that you obtain is simply one observation of that process. Now, these are ensemble averages. If you do not have an ensemble, if you do not have a collection, but there's only one image or one signal that is a function of time, then you are forced to compute the statistics using the samples from just that one observation. There is no averaging possible across ensemble, then what is the possibility? You average across time or across space, because the samples are distributed as a function of time in the case of a temporal signal, or as a function of space in the case of images. So you take those samples, pixel values or voxel values, and average them to compute your statistics. Because after all, these values are simply arranged in the image or signal by some convention or by the data formation technique you're using. Otherwise, all of these samples are members of some process that generated these values. So for the sake of computing statistics, when you have only one sample observation, FKT, as a function of time, it is possible to compute time averages or temporal statistics. Now, if you have a number of signals, then you could do this for every one of them. Later on, we will make the assumption of ergodicity, and then given only one image, we will do this just with that one image. But if there are several images, you could possibly compute the averages across space, as I mentioned in the image earlier, or if they are functions of time, across time. So mu fk, in the case of a function of time, could be written in this manner, where you are integrating over a window from minus t over 2 to plus t over 2, or if you want 0 to t, if you want to be causal, over a window of duration t, and take the limit as the window becomes large and t tends to infinity. So that is required in order to have a large number of samples for averaging. Then, for every sample observation k, if you have many of them, you have a certain average, mu f. The time-averaged autocorrelation function can be expressed for each k, for each observation, as phi f of tau, where tau is the shift given in time, fkt plus tau dt integrated over a certain window of duration t, averaged, limit as t tends to infinity. Note that there is no summing on k, which is the index of the sample. So this is computed for a given sample observation. So given an observation of a random process as an image, fkxy, then you would take spatial averages or spatial statistics. And now you have integration in the space domain or summation. You can change the integral to sum if you wish. Fxy dx dy over a certain area and a normalization factor applied. So this is mu f of k for the kth observation fk. And the autocorrelation function is phi f alpha beta k, fkxy fkx plus alpha y plus beta, and the integral of that. So you're multiplying two values separated by a spatial distance alpha beta and averaging over all space, because we're assuming you only have one observation at this time or for a given observation. You could normalize this by phi f 0, 0, which is the energy of the image. For alpha beta equal to 0, it is fk square. So that is used as a normalization factor. And the sample index k could be dropped or is irrelevant if there is only one observation available. Now, it is possible to do this in combinations of space and time. For example, the video signal. We have a picture here of me moving around, and we have a function xy. Although this is a three-dimensional scene and a three-dimensional world, the camera is capturing only one image as a planar image fxy, but as a function of time in the video. So fxyt is a video signal that's a two-dimensional function as a function of time. And then we could compute statistics for one frame, fxyt1, at t equal to t1. And they are known as intra-frame statistics within one frame. Or we could compute parameters through multiple frames over a certain period of time, and then we get inter-frame statistics, similar to 3D data set. So same as what I showed, an ensemble of images. Now you have one frame, the next frame, and the next frame, and so on, as a function of time. And if you cut across the ensemble, that represents time instead of k, the index of the sample observation. And that will be temporal or inter-frame statistics of the image as a video signal. But if you take only one frame, you take one snapshot and compute statistics across the space within fxyt1, then that is intra-frame or spatial statistics of the video signal. In biomedical imaging, we could have both. We could have three things, fxy as one image, fxyt as a video image of something, or fxyz, where z is also the spatial dimension. Such as in CT imaging, xy could be the cross-sectional plane, and the z-axis could be along the axis of the long axis of the body. So it is a three-dimensional function of space. But if you are scanning it in a particular order, you could also put an artificial time axis. The mean of an image represents its average intensity or density. If it is a light image, it is the average light. If it is a CT image translated to density or normalized density as Hounsfield units, it is the average value of that variable, whatever it represents. And we know that the removal of the mean leads to an image with only edge information. When you take the derivative, the mean is removed, including the first and second order derivatives such as the Laplacian, and you only see edges. The mean is important in conveying the average level of the density or intensity in the image. The autocorrelation function has an important role in the characterization of random processes. An important relationship, and I would like you to derive that as a homework exercise if you want to do it yourself. The Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function is equal to the power spectral density, which is the square of the Fourier transform of the original signal. So the autocorrelation function is related to the power spectral density, and the power spectral density is useful in the analysis of the bandwidth of the image the transmission requirement in terms of bandwidth and in the frequency domain analysis of the signal. So the autocorrelation is related to the spectral density via the Fourier transform. Statistical functions of the nature I have described so far are useful in the analysis of the behavior of random processes in general, just to study the nature of the process that generates the signal or data that you have, the image data. In modeling the PDF, for example, in modeling the autocorrelation or spectral density. In spectrum analysis, in filter design, if you want to design an optimal filter, such as the Wiener filter, you need to know the pass spectral density or the autocorrelation function of the system or process that generates images of the kind you want to filter. Data compression and data communication for bandwidth requirements and storage requirements in optimized or compressed domain, you need to know what is the extent of compression permissible beyond which there could be loss of information.